Good morning. Good morning. My name is Andrea Simintov, and you're listening to Pull Up a Chair on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Thank you. For those who are joining me live this morning, very, very grateful. On the Gregorian calendar, it seems to be, last I looked, Thursday morning in Jerusalem on the fourth day of the fourth Gregorian month, 2024. With us this morning are listeners from the United States. And thank you. It's very late at night there, 9 p.m. on the West Coast and midnight, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, midnight on the East Coast. So very, very grateful. Good morning, Canada. Nice to see you. UK is with us today. I have a UK story. Israel, Boker Tov Eretz Israel, Boker Shalom Eretz Israel, Boker Nifla Eretz Israel. Uganda is with us this morning. Very nice. Australia, France is with us, and Ghana. And as other friends join the morning, pour their coffee, or if it's late at night, have a little glass of wine, we'll call them out. It's rough. You know, we're still at war. We are still at war. When are we not at war? But we are still, I would love to say not in the midst, but we are still experiencing the ugliness of the October 7th pogrom. And I was sort of, thinking Pesach is coming, Passover is coming, and we know that traditionally this is when Jewish women start their, are we allowed to say that? Are we allowed to say that in woke society? This is when Jewish women start the home purging. Yeah, we'll do that one. And we start to clean up to rid our physical homes of chametz, leavened products, as well as free our souls, our thinking, our orbits of that same puffed up arrogance. And in my cleaning up, I was kind of cleaning up all the Purim things that are still around. We got rid of all the mishloach manot, all of the, there was the gift packages of chocolate chip cookies that nobody needed and homemade hamantashes, some of which were not so good. Anyway, I was getting rid of them. Good morning, South Africa has joined us. How can I start without South Africa? And came across a magazine that on my pile of intended readings, we know we have the intended readings, and I came across a magazine. Here we have my magazine. And I don't know, I don't get it all the time. It's HaMizrahi. It's put out by the International Mizrahi Organization. This is the Israel edition. And of course, these articles are written prior to the holiday. Obviously, on the morning of Purim, Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Rimon is not putting in the article. He's submitting it a month before. And it was almost like a punch in the gut, because there's a magnificent article in this magazine, the Purim magazine, and the name of the article is called Never Despair, The Eternal Lesson of Purim and the Feast of Esther. So why am I pulling this out now? Of course, we are Jews. We can always talk about despair. But the reason I mention this is that this article that was submitted before Purim was written by the holy and besieged Rabbi Doron Perez, who at the time he wrote this article, his son was still perceived as a captive in Gaza by the nefarious, filthy Hamas organization. And of course, by the time this article was presented to the public and published, his son was declared dead. And I thought to myself, I mean, I happen to personally know, not deeply, not closely, but I've had the blessed honor of meeting both Rabbi Perez and his wonderful wife, Shelley, several times over the years. And they really are what we say, the salt of the earth. And I know that he does not ever use words lazily, sloppily, callously. Any of you who had indeed the honor, the merit of watching the funeral of his beloved son, Daniel, you can still see it. You could find it on YouTube, to hear the words of this incredible role model speaking in a manner that I have trouble fathoming. Somebody who has just experienced the most unimaginative loss that unfortunately is becoming all too common here in Israel. And he spoke with such passion and such love for Haaretz and such love for Am Yisrael, the land of Israel, the people of Israel. And the reason I talk about coming across this article is I want to share with you Rabbi Peres's first paragraph in this article, whose black letters on the white page will be committed to time. Never despair the eternal lesson of Purim and the fast of Esther. Despair. If I had to pick one word, which to my mind is the polar opposite of everything Judaism stands for, it would be despair. It is this very same sentiment of despair and hopelessness that the fast of Esther and festival of Purim totally reject. There is no such thing as despair in the Jewish worldview. Darkness and difficulty, pain and suffering, exile and anguish, struggle and challenge. Unfortunately, yes. But dejection and despair? Never. Those are the words of Rabbi Doron Peres. And I must share that I know for me and in my work and in my life's writing, and the reason we even do this show is to share that despair does not exist. There is always light. And as Jews who have been besieged at every moment in our history, these words ring even, can you say more true? Can we say truer? And someone, I think I've mentioned on the show before, that someone once asked me on a visit to South Africa, Andrea, are we going to win the war? It still haunts me. I still wake up with this. We don't think like that. It's not Jewish thought. We do not wring our hands. But what is very, very important, and we will talk more about this on the program, is that we don't wait and sit like sitting ducks while other Jews do history, defend our people, preserve our land, and watch, wringing our hands and saying, I hope it turns out all right. Because I am, in my humble opinion, the polar opposite of despair is action. And as long as we live and we breathe, every one of us, whether listening live or listening on podcast or not listening yet or never listening, we have the options. We can act, but more importantly, we must act. And yes, I'm talking to you. All right. Somebody once said, you know, the outcome for the Arabs is always the same. Let's do the math. Okay, we're doing the math. The option for Arabs is always the same. They start wars and they lose them. But the big trick is that starting wars and losing them every time does not make you oppressed. It makes you a 75-year-long sore loser. A wimpy playground child who kicks people in the back, and when you get a good zets, a good punch, you scream, "They hit me! They hit me!" You've lost your audience. Maybe not yet, maybe not entirely. I see, the Arab mentality. It doesn't even count to say shame on you. Shameless. And for my Arab friends who are listening in, you have work to do. You're not exempt. Your community is diseased. And if you are clear thinking, if you are moral, if you dream of a better tomorrow for your children, you have work to do. And sometimes it costs. You have a lot to learn from Jews. All right. So last Thursday evening, let me just say, I want to open up this window here. It's a good window, good window. So last Wednesday evening, the last plane, at least the last for the time being, the last El Al flight left Johannesburg. Let's just see where I have this now. Yeah, left Johannesburg. I was on the next to last flight for, not the mic, I'm getting very excited here. And somebody just put it very, very eloquently. Something was forwarded to me and it says, really, that's it. This would have been last week. It's the last LL flight out of South Africa last night. From now on, South Africa will plunge into an even darker abyss. And the more Jews leave South Africa, the more South Africa will move backward into the Dark Ages. It was already close to being in the Dark Ages before this. History has proven that every country in which Jews left or which cursed Israel became irrelevant. Yeah, that's about it. I will be going back to South Africa again, please God. But it's a sad, every day becomes sadder and sadder. And I think my friends in South Africa, my Jewish friends, you know what you have to do. And my friends in Israel, my South African friends with Jewish family still in South Africa, don't believe that your words are falling on deaf ears. Nobody can claim ignorance. Keep pushing. Keep helping. Keep trying to bring them home. Indeed, it's an act of pikuei nefesh, saving a life. Okay, had a client yesterday. A lot of fun. Oh, good morning. Germany has joined us. Very, very nice. Good morning, Germany. What do you say? Guten Morgen. I was thinking recently, you know, how much do I love this country? It's so liberating to be able to say it. I was out to dinner recently and there were protests in the street. I was eating not far from the Knesset. Wait, a sip of coffee. And I did not agree with the protests and what the protesters were protesting. Made me uncomfortable, made me sad. And I thought to myself, what a marvelous country. The one thing nobody can ever, crazy. We're under siege. We are detested. From some of my reading, I believe that we are the most loathed people in the world. I promise you, you want to feel alive? Come to Israel. Israelis from every corner of the political spectrum, whether they're on my team or another team, we're all on the same team, the Am Yisrael team. But the vibrancy, the passion, the raison d'etre, the reason for being is so prevalent. We wake up fighting. We wake up passionate. We wake up involved. And in our small country, the size of New Jersey, sometimes we reach beyond and we're busy cleaning the oceans and cleaning the air and curing the diseases. Our passion is absolutely indisputable. And I thought about this. I digressed. When I had a client this week who her son is being bar mitzvahed, I believe it is next Shabbos, not this Shabbos, it's next Shabbos. And they were going to do the typical thing that we do here in Israel, which is even the typical bar mitzvahs here, the ones that we consider garish, are very not garish as compared to the West. And I don't know what West is, but Galut countries, the diaspora countries. Here, the bar mitzvahs traditionally, certainly in my national religious circles, are we do a, there will be a catered brunch or a catered evening in a synagogue hall or a yeshiva gymnasium. They'll bring in bagels, lox and cream cheese, beautiful dairy. Maybe it'll be a meat buffet. The bar mitzvah boy will talk. There's dancing. It's not crazy. There's no Viennese tables. We don't have, I remember when I was a young woman working in these catering halls in New York, once they rode the bar mitzvah boy into the room on a motorcycle with a group of Hell's Angels. So, you know, I can't believe I just remembered that. No, our bar mitzvahs tend to be quite modest as compared to, let's say, the New York City bar mitzvahs of my youth. Having said that, this boy, who is not yet 12, turned to his parents about three Shabbases ago, and said, I've given some thought to my bar mitzvah. Cancel the party. And they said, okay, what is it that you want to do? And he is beginning his bar mitzvah, I believe, next Wednesday or Thursday. There's a run with the organization Ofakim. And I have to learn more. I don't want to talk about Ofakim yet until I do my research. But they're involved with the rehabilitation of soldiers. He's running from the Soldiers Rehabilitation Center here in Jerusalem, and he is running to the home of a missing chayal, missing soldier, whose parents are very, very involved with the hostage movement, freeing the hostage movement. This is a boy who hasn't turned 13 yet. That's how he's starting. Then the family is packing up, going, oh, yeah, that's it. So they're going to a lot where I think the Ofakim run finishes. And anybody who knows better, you can send me a note, Andrea@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. But I just want you to understand the details of this. Well, the details are always very challenging for me. But the point is the spirit of this boy, who in Israel is what we would consider to be an ordinary child, a regular Israeli boy in the national religious school system. He's finishing the run down in Eilat. And then they're going to spend the Sabbath, they're going to spend Shabbos in the hotel with the runners from the injured soldiers' units. They're going to spend the same Sabbath with some hostage families. He's going to read the Torah, and then they'll do a closing Sabbath. I mean, a closing party after the, it's called a Malava Malka, where we escort the Shabbos out. And any money, he's written to his relatives, and any money and any gifts that he receives are being donated to the rehabilitation of these soldiers. Well, it's my friend's child, so obviously my friend believes that this is an exceptional child. And it is an exceptional child. Every child born is an exceptional child. What I'm aiming to impart is that here in Israel, exceptional is the rule of the day. Exceptional is who we are. We've all come from other corners of the earth. And I beg my Israeli brothers and sisters, on days when you despair, throw back your head, shake out your shoulders, and say, I am part of the most exceptional nation to ever walk the face of the earth. Indeed, I am among the chosen. So this week in England this week, last week, I can't even, it's with shame for the human race that I share with you. Apparently, nurses, British National Health Service nurses in the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital removed a visibly Jewish boy from his bay, where his bed was. This boy has a very rare blood disease, a chronic disease that is being treated regularly at, superiorly treated at the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. And these nurses, wearing pro-Palestinian pins, stickers, took this young boy, kicked him out of the bed. He actually ended up laying on a floor. They didn't find a bed for him, not a cot, not a mattress. He regularly attends this hospital, getting his, I don't know the name of the disease, but he has to get blood transfusions every 2 months. This is according to the Jewish News. And his uncle, I don't know the child's name, but his uncle's name is Elliot Strauss. And what Elliot Strauss reported was that as a religious Jewish family, my nephew wears his black kippah, his religious hat, whatever you want to call it, and his tzitzit, his ritual fringes proudly. So today, he says, not today, why do you ask? The nurses were all walking around wearing free Palestine pins. He was frightened, and the last few times he went in, he was denied correct medical care by the same couple of nurses every time. Now, I don't know anybody listening to this show. I know that we have people listening in from the UK. I must know, please write to me, have these nurses been fired, or are they still on staff? It's noted that prior to the conflict, he received excellent care. Is this the world we live in? 1940 again, terrifying to be a Jew. Yeah, we get it. And what does the hospital have to say about themselves? We're aware of these very serious claims. We're rapidly investigating the claims to establish the situation, discussing them with the family involved. Royal Manchester Children's Hospital is committed to providing high-quality care to all of our patients. If any of you know the article, if any of you have an update, please write it to me, send it to me. Are they just words? Is it quality care to all patients except Jews? I'd like to know. And if something has been resolved here, we'll give them the proper shout out. And if not, we will diss them. We will let it known. We will not let them fall under the radar as another vile avenue of anti-Semitic celebration. Talking about that, so again, the question is, as Andrea finishes, let's watch the clock here, look at that. What are you doing in England? What is your defense? The question is rhetorical. Absolutely rhetorical. What are you frightened of coming home to Israel? You're frightened that you'll be doing what was commanded of you and may spend some time in a bomb shelter until the situation is rectified? Are you frightened that you'll be moral role models for your children who will look at their parents and say, my parents did the right thing, even though they were frightened? You're frightened you won't make the same kind of living as you stay in your beautiful homes in Golders Green, in Manchester, in Hendon? But frightened to let your children walk out wearing tzitzit for kippot? You think your baseball caps and your multi-thousand euro wigs are somehow absolving you from doing the right thing? Come home. Come home. Come home. We're not often begged to come on home. Which brings us to New York. This is a report that I cannot, I think last week I called both President Biden and Chuck Schumer, I called them schmucks, and I was like a little nervous about that name, but nobody wrote to me. Oh, good morning. Colombia and Brazil are with us. Very nice, very exciting. Thank you for joining us on the live show. But this is even beyond. I cannot quote, but let me just say, here's a story that begins with effing murderous kikes. Pro-Palestinian protesters harass Jewish woman in New York City. New York City, where even non-Jews speak Yiddish, where even non-Jews schmooze and schlep, where everyone is Jewish. You know, the Irish, they wear the shamrocks and says, kiss me, I'm Irish. In New York, it was kiss me, I'm Jewish. Because everybody is. Not anymore. Not anymore. The festering pestilence that call themselves Palestinians. Paren, sick, close paren. Have infected my beloved New York with their odious disease. Anti-Israel protests continue to occur throughout the United States of America. And on last Friday, I believe it was the day after last week's show, a Jewish woman was called an effing murderous kike. She must have been terrified. Terrified. They called her various other words. I won't even give you the initials. Too vulgar to repeat. Where did this take place? Outside of Radio City's music hall. chanting against the US and Israel. It was reported, I don't even, how do you calculate these numbers? A 700% increase in anti-Semitic attacks attaching Jewish students with anti-Israel protests, which now are becoming violent. Which will be the one? Which will be the attack? My Jewish brothers and sisters in New York, which is it? What are you waiting for? As you go and you look and say, maybe we'll do a carnival cruise. Maybe we'll, oh my gosh, this one, this matzah isn't kosher enough. We need this matzah. This meat isn't. You brought children into the world. That's not when the job was done. It was a partnership. We're all brought into this world. We're born knowing God. We're born as products of the partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us. We're created in his image of love, his image of giving, his image of teaching, his image of bettering. What's the big plan? That you'll pass from your days. Some of you will be buried on Long Island. Some of you will be buried. You didn't live in Israel, but you'll be buried in Israel. There you think is the Kedusha. And you will wring your hands if you're thinkers and say, I hope it's not bad for my children. I hope it passes. All this scary stuff. Or will you have the hard conversations, sit with your families and say, hi, it's me, Tati. Hi, it's me, Mommy. We're scared, but we're going to do the only right thing. And we're going to not just leave our fates in the hands and the morality and the principles of those who find us odious. Come home. You may not earn the same. The air you breathe. To see your children free in the streets. Wearing their kippot or not wearing their kippot, wearing their tzitzit, their fringes, not wearing their fringes, singing Jewish songs, knowing every chag, every holiday, celebrating the soldiers who protect them, protect us, protect our every tomorrow. A life with meaning. You know? When you really invest in your life in Israel, it's not what will I do today? It's how much can I do today? That's being pulled in every direction. Which aspect of Tikkun Olam is reaching, grabbing, clawing at me today? I've yet, in almost 29 years of living in the Holy Land, I have yet to experience a sensation of boredom. I'm so bored, looking for something to do. And if these stories aren't ugly enough, yeah, I'm going to just keep beating this. I'm going to keep beating this drum. But now, the BDS campaign, imagine if this was your daughter. Lovely girl. Let's see. What is this girl's name? I lost the beginning of my article. Oh, here we are. Nice girl. Looks like all of us. She's got a little, she's got a nice look. She's got a little bit of a Mayim Bialik looked to her. Her name is Rivka Schaefer. Rivka Schaefer is a student at Rutgers University. She's a freshman. The girl's 18 years old. What month are we in now? Yes, I don't know when she started. 18 years old. Clearly cares about Israel, wears a beautiful Magen David, a Jewish star. Why should she be ashamed? It's a lovely thing. It's a proud thing to be Jewish. And suddenly, overnight, her face was plastered all over signs at Rutgers University. Free Palestine and free Gaza, said the flyers with Rivka Schaefer's face on them, urging a yes vote for the university to divest from Israel. I'm not sure what the point of putting her face on. Was it to show what a Jew looks like? Was it to show that even she supports it? Her terror. And understand that that's what terrorism, we use that word so much that it's lost its weight. The absolute heft of the word terror. This is a girl who is now terrified of leaving her house. The point was to single her out for her religious beliefs. And the school, Rutgers, used to be such a fine, esteemed institution of higher learning. My beloved uncle was the head of the chemical engineering department of Rutgers University for decades. Rutgers, feckless, frightened, weak and anemic, did not even offer the courtesy of a response to reporters' comments. Her face apparently was grabbed off of a social media video from the Student Supporting Israel march earlier the week prior. It was cropped, blown up by these people with no morality, no decency, agenda freaks.
Top of the lash line.
And people haters. And so apparently, as of last Friday, the day after the show, the Rutgers students had until Friday at midnight to vote on a referendum targeting the school's investments in companies tied to Israel and its partnerships with Tel Aviv University, which began in 2020. You know, I'm getting off script now. I had it with this story. But I'm going to tell you one thing. My emuna, my I take it proudly. You want to divest from Israel? You want to separate from Jews? Remember Rabbi Peres's words. Despair is not what we do. It's the antithesis of Jewish thought and Jewish behavior. Don't divest. Hey, Rutgers, do what South Africa's doing. Let the Jews leave. We'll monitor your success. We'll monitor your futures. You will go the way of the Romans. You will go the way of the Greeks. You will disappear into the abyss of the human wasteland. That's where you think your bread is buttered? Go. BDS, don't be frightened. Jews, don't be frightened. Do not ask the question, will we win the war? We will win. We always win. We are the world's winner. We are the presence of morality. Let's just continue to be our best. How sick is this world? I beg you, Jews. I beg you. Oh, good morning. Sweden is with us. Hi, Sweden. Well, this is a little close to home. since Sweden how just joined us. Apparently, a physically healthy Dutch woman, a 28-year-old woman without any physical ailments, of course, she claims to be a sufferer of depression. And please don't send me letters and say, Andrea, you're mocking depression. You don't know how bad depression really is. God forbid. God forbid I should be like that. God forbid I'm insensitive. But I will tell you that real depression is such a poison that very few people who are bandying about, I'm in therapy for 12 years because I have depression. I'm so depressed. They didn't have the skirt in my size. I'm really depressed. My dog died. I'm depressed. The supermarket didn't have my Hechscher chicken. It's so depressing. We bandy about these words instead of compassionately embracing the sufferers, imbuing them with spiritual joy and spiritual hope. And what do? We pander. Here's a physically healthy 28-year-old Dutch woman who has decided to legally end her life due to her struggles with crippling depression, autism, and borderline personality disorder, according to a report. This woman, Zoraya Ter Beek, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, lives in a small village in the Netherlands near the German border, and she is scheduled to be euthanized this May, despite being in love with her 40-year-old boyfriend and living with two cats. So she has joy in her life. I'm not measuring it. I'm not saying it's, you know what, two cats? Two cats may not do it for me. Two cats really do it for people. There's something very blessed and very beautiful about service animals. They say that people, the elderly who are taking care of animals, live longer lives and more qualitative lives. A lot of stuff to be said about that. But it was always very clear that if I don't get better, I can't do this anymore. So I'm going to actually get off script and tell you something. In my coaching practice, I coach primarily women who are 55 and older. I like them the best. They're the most fun. They're the most driven. They're the most determined. They're smart. They know what they want, and they know what they won't do anymore. And the first lesson, I'm giving it to you free, okay? It's usually between 200 and 250 shekels, but here, it's a bonus, a Shabbos bonus. Four words we take out of our vocabulary before we continue the process. Would, could, should, and why. When someone says, I can't do this, I mean, I can't ride a motorcycle without a license. I can't do brain surgery because I'm not trained. There's a lot of reasons where I probably shouldn't. But when we say, I can't watch my eating. I can't stop eating sugar. I can't not drink scotch at 7 a.m. We're giving ourselves a pass. There's a lot of things we won't do, we don't do. And when she says, I can't take it anymore, I won't take it anymore. I'm not talking about her. What I'm talking about is the abyss. We say in Hebrew, the pilug, the chasm that exists between a spiritual life and a world of atheism. that leaves us believing that it's all up to our own devices, whether we're happy or sad, whether we live or die, whether we contribute or not. We wake up every day in the world of atheism, in the world of godlessness, and we think, how will I negotiate today? Live a life that's good enough until I die and disappear into nothingness. It's not about this girl. Zoraya, turn the page already. This girl, this 28-year-old child, is a victim of abuse. And I call it atheistic abuse. She was starved. Her spiritual soul, her spiritual center, her spiritual spine was never nourished. She was never fed. And as her spiritual muscles atrophied to near death, the only thing that's left in her way of thinking and her popular way of thinking is to decide on her own volition, because it's always been her own volition, to end her life. And why wouldn't she? Because just this past February, the Dutch Prime Minister, Dries Van Acht, and his wife, they died. National leaders. If we don't demand spirituality from our leaders, if we don't demand leaders who have the humility to walk with God, this is what we're going to end up with. All right. No, we're not going to talk about Haredim and the army now. Let's take a deep breath. Let's stretch. Woohoo! And let's talk about this week's Torah portion. We are getting close. We're getting I just want to give a PSA. Please, God, during the week of Passover, Pesach, I will be in Silver Spring, Maryland, and I will be speaking to a women's group. It's not in the neighborhood of White Oak, and it'll be either on the second day of either Yontif, on either holiday, or it will be Shabbos afternoon. Next week, I will announce, let you know when I'll be speaking, where it will be, how you can find out, and it would be absolutely a pleasure to meet you in Silver Spring, Maryland, over Yontif. Okay, we are in this week's Torah portion, Parshas Shemini. And according to Rabbi Wein, who I must read, I must connect with, I must listen to on tape, on podcast each week. So Rabbi Wein shares that we are all aware that personal disappointments and tragedies, they're unavoidable events in the lifespan of human beings. Do we not talk about this on this show all the time? The most meaningful life is a messy life. It's a textured life. It's a life where we interact and we sometimes succeed and we sometimes fail and we sometimes fall and we sometimes soar. But it's to be in the game. As Rabbi Wein says, no one departs from this world unscathed by difficulties. This week's parsha, this week's portion, we are informed, we're told about the death of the two oldest sons of Aharon. And the Torah describes their deaths and says that these deaths are due to the fact that they offered up a strange fire on the altar in the process of burning the holy incense. I don't know about you. I always had a real hard time with this parsha. A hard time. It doesn't sound like such a big deal. I mean, what did they do? and to step away from it. What's even more interesting, or certainly to me most poignant, is the reaction of their father, Aaron. He's silent. Silence is his correct and appropriate reaction to the tragedy of losing his sons. So wouldn't we be led to believe that this tragic moment in the life of Aaron and his family, it was the end of his public career, end of his service. It was humiliating. Wouldn't it be obvious? Couldn't you understand that Aaron just would retire and gives the priesthood to others to take over? The eighth day represents continuity in Jewish life. The eighth day, this happened on the eighth day of the consecration. That eighth day is always representative of continuity. It's the day that we ideally perform circumcisions, the Brit Milah. It's a day when the seven-day mourning period is over. It's a day that allows us to look to the future. It's the day of recovery and rejuvenation. The history of the Jewish people, it's a mirror image of the lives of individuals. A lot of tragedy, a lot of sadness. And yet, to go back to Rabbi Peretz's words or his thoughts, the message he's imparting, Jewish history is a story of great resilience. Our story is the story of the eighth day. We are not defined by 7 days of mourning and sadness. Rabbi Abba Waxenberg on the Eish HaTorah site this week actually breaks down the story of Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aharon, and talks about what is it that they did that was so terrible, so wrong. And so here's the breakdown, and I hope that you'll appreciate it as much as I do. First of all, they were impatient with Moshe and Aharon. They were waiting for them to die so that they could take over the leadership of the Jewish people. They were next in line. They made legal decisions in front of Moshe, who was their Rebbe. It was a sign of disrespect. They entered a holy area while intoxicated. How intoxicated, I don't know. But they had wine. They entered the holy area without first washing their hands and feet. They knew the rules. This was an expression of abject arrogance. They entered the holy area without wearing their priestly garments. They didn't get married, and consequently, they didn't have children. Now, some of these reasons might seem very unrelated, but they suggest they all come from a fundamental fault. By themselves, they were great people. They were aware of their high spiritual level. And yet, they decided themselves. Are we seeing a little theme in here? They decided that they had already reached the pinnacle of their achievement. There was no need to strive further. There was no need to improve. We've often heard of the term, the measure of a man. you know, there's a common source of these seven reasons. But I wanted to tell you the measure of a man in Hebrew, the same word, midot, it means measurements and character traits. We talk to our children and we say to them, we want you to develop our best midot. Sometimes somebody has a negative mida, a negative character trait. And that's why the fire that consumed them, both Nadav and Avihu, it came from the Holy of Holdings, the resting place of the ark. The ark, with its fractional measurements, midot, teaches us that we too are fractional. We lack in Torah knowledge. We are imperfect in our refinement of character. Nadav and Avihu, they thought they had arrived. The origin of the fire showed them they still had work to do. If this lesson was relevant to such incredible people like Nadav and Avihu, how much more relevant is it to us? You know, we should take pleasure in our positive achievements. We shouldn't take pride. We shouldn't feel so satisfied, so smug, that we lose our yearning to stretch and grow further. So let me just, let's start to wind down today's program a little bit. We have a lot to do. We got to get ready for Shabbos. And I don't know what's going on at your Shabbos table, but we have a lot to discuss this week about arrogance, pride, and our partnership with Hashem. So Nadav and Avihu, they were all Kohanim. So when they said, when will these two elders, Moshe and Aaron, when will they finally depart from this world so we can assume leadership? They spoke the truth because they were the next leaders of Israel. However, they lacked humility, as evidenced in this statement, and they proceeded to kind of demonstrate this casual familiarity with the priestly service, which had been strictly, strictly ordained by God. Nachshoni, in Studies in the Weekly Parsha, he quotes Sifsei Tzadik. It holds that Nadav and Avihu deserved to die for doing what they were not commanded. Had they only done what God commanded them, they would have seen the fulfillment of V'chai behem, and they shall live by them. The Torah grants man life, so he should not cease to exist. Not only did they transgress the laws prohibiting direct contact with the Holy of Holies, they exhibited a serious lack of faith regarding divine providence over the ark. This lack of belief and trust in God was unbefitting men of their stature. I wish all of us a Shabbat Shalom Umivorach from Jerusalem, and let's unite in our humility and faith. Bye-bye.